Welcome. You are listening to Our Mindful Nature, formerly titled The Mindful Minute. I'm your host, Meryl Arnett, and this podcast explores the deep connection between land and self through nature-based meditations and meditative experiences that invite us back into belonging to each other, to our ancestors, to the earth, and to all beings that make up this universe. If you would like to access these meditation practices as standalone audio files, please subscribe to my newsletter at merylarnett.com. It's free, and you'll receive a new mini meditation each week, along with behind-the-scenes content and bonus material for each podcast episode. All right, grab a cup of tea, pop in your headphones, and find a comfy seat. Let's settle in for today's episode. Back when humans were living in communal caves and tribal encampments, we told stories about the stars, even though we didn't know what they were. When we started sailing, we used these same pinpricks of light to estimate our own location. When we began planting, we counted on the sun's position and the appearance and disappearance of certain constellations to remember when to plant and harvest our crops. Now, we tell stories about ourselves, and we use advanced tools to navigate. For the most part, someone else does the planting for us, and seasonal changes are marked by back-to-school sales and spring cleaning. While we arguably understand ourselves and the planet better than we did long ago, we've mostly lost our connection to the cosmos and to our planet. Welcome, you guys. I have just read part of the introduction to a book called Astronomical Mindfulness, Your Cosmic Guide to Reconnecting with the Sun, Moon, Stars, and Planet. Today, I am bringing you an interview with one of the authors, Sarah Scholes, and we are going to talk about why staring at the sky matters, how it's a mindfulness practice, and how it can change the way you relate with your day-to-day mundane minutia, right, that we experience. I'm so excited to bring this conversation to you. And this conversation was so much fun. I know you're going to be able to hear my excitement. I was like a little kid asking all the questions. Now, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation with Sarah as much as I did. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to talk about your new book. It's coming at such a fun time. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure. So we are talking about your new book, Astronomical Mindfulness, that you co-wrote with an author that actually I think is in my hometown. Chris teaches at Agnes Scott, yes?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, awesome. I didn't realize you were there.
Yeah, so that's my hometown. Chris is an astronomy professor and you are a science writer, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So tell us a little bit about how this book came to be.
Sure. Well, I guess it starts back at Agnes Scott College, where I was Chris's student about, let's see if I could do the math, about 14 years ago.
Amazing.
His astronomy major student. And, you know, he has taught astronomy at all college levels for a long time and has done a lot of labs where students get to observe the night sky with telescopes and with their eyes and then with the public. And I think over the course of doing that, he's seen how paying attention to the sky and having a cosmic perspective can kind of change the way that people think about their place on Earth. And, you know, I was one of those people that changed for. And so when he came to me with this idea of like, let's take some of these exercises that we do and then relate them back to mindfulness, I was like, that's a great combination and I would like to be a part of it.
I think that's amazing. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me as I was reading the book was how simple the exercises were. At first glance, I was like, oh, this looks like maybe there's math involved. I don't know. But then in all actuality, you could literally do them seated on seated on my back deck, just me and the book. And I had no mathematical genius next to me to help me. For listeners who are likely engaged in a meditation practice, it's such a fun experience
to explore mindfulness in ways that aren't a seated meditation practice necessarily. So often we're seated with our eyes closed, we're likely indoors, and to take our practice outside and open up our eyes and place us in time and space is really a powerful experience. So I wonder if you have some thoughts just about what astronomical mindfulness is as it relates to how we move through the world.
Sure. I think of, and I should say I'm not, you know, a mindfulness expert by any means, but I think of it as very related to, you know, paying attention to where you are and what you're experiencing at any given present moment and paying attention to that. And I think, like you said, a lot of the times that's, you know, related to, you know, your body or the environment and your mind. And we kind of think of astronomical mindfulness as expanding that to also include the present, that is the whole, you know, billions of light years extra of space all around you that is also part of our environment and our present, and that we kind of neglect. And so I think the exercises, at least we hope that they kind of remind you that the Earth, whose, you know, deck you're sitting on, is a planet with other planets in the solar system, in the galaxy, in the universe. And so kind of just incorporating that all into your conception of what the present means.
What is it meant for you to place Earth in space in the solar system, right? To identify where we are. What has that done for you and your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I've been kind of obsessed with space since I was a really little kid. I grew up really close to Kennedy Space Center. And so I was always watching shuttle launches, like from my backyard. They would set off our like little burglar alarms when they landed and stuff. So space has always kind of like been a part of my conception of things. And I think as I grew older and started studying astronomy, like very occasionally, I would just step back and be like, wow, this place is a planet, and we are in space. And I think for a little while, especially when I was kind of like an existential teenager, that made me kind of sad about our very tiny place in the universe. But now I think it seems very special to be a part of that, even if it's a small part. And so I think gaining that perspective, that astronomers, they don't talk about it necessarily from a mindfulness perspective, but they just call it a cosmic perspective, that like time is long, the universe is really big, and you get to be a part of it, kind of puts it all into place, you know?
Yeah. I shared in a previous episode, so listeners will be familiar, but earlier in the pandemic, I'm very much a morning person. I go to bed early, I wake up early. But earlier in the pandemic, and just a, you know, one of the exhaustive moments when we've been home, the kids are being the kids. It was at night, I had gotten the kids to bed, and I was like, I have to get out of this house. And I stepped out for a walk at night, which I never, ever do. And it completely changed my experience of evening, I suppose. Like there was this whole experience that I was not aware of because I never stepped outside at night. And from that one walk came this whole practice of a couple times a week, I take a walk at night, and I almost always now step out on my back deck at night, just like for 10 seconds, even as I'm locking up the house at night, just step outside. And then I had these other conversations with friends and colleagues who said the same thing. And none of us were identifying it as a specific practice. It was just like this weird thing we did and never talked about, like, why do I step outside for 10 minutes and stare at the sky? And now you have this entire book that really gives some practice to that. Why would, you know, why are we called to do that? And what I love is in your introduction, you really talk about this shift from, originally, our cultures were telling stories about stars, and now we're really telling stories about ourselves. And that feels like a huge shift. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about why paying attention to the stars, why these stories feel so poignant right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we started working on writing this book kind of right before the pandemic started. And so it seems like it's become even more relevant for exactly the reasons that you say. But I think, you know, we as humans have always paid attention to the stars, like you said, that thousands of years ago, probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, like that was what was there to pay attention to at night. And humans use stars to navigate, to know when to plant crops for a spiritual practice, for marking time. And we you know, in part because of city lights and because we're busy and we're in our apartments and houses, we don't really pay attention to that anymore. But I think there's something very fundamentally human about just, you know, the sky is, you know, half of what we see on any given day, and we just don't pay attention to it. But it's kind of a vector, I guess, for being able to ask and think about big questions like, where did we come from? What does it mean that we're here? And kind of a repository for stories. And especially during the pandemic, I think as a way to mark time, like, you know, we all get caught up in our day-to-day, especially when we, especially in the early days when everyone was just home and everything was the same all the time, and everything passed quickly, but at the same time, extremely slowly. And there was just none of the normal markers that we have. And I think, you know, stepping out to notice, oh, the phase of the moon changed, or like the sun is setting in a slightly different spot, can be a way to just kind of notice the passage of time in a way that's connected to the rest of the universe.
One of my favorite things about the book is at the end of each section, you include a story or an interview with an indigenous astronomer from different cultures, and just relate our sort of modern experience with more traditional experience, or experience that has gone on uninterrupted for eons. And I'm curious if any of those in particular jump out at you as powerful.
Yeah, I think the one I've been thinking a lot about lately is a man named Willy Barreno, who had grown up in Guatemala during a time of conflict, and also a time when he was kind of estranged from the culture that he came from, which was the Maya culture. And, you know, the contributions of the Maya at the time were not very appreciated within the country. And so I think he said that he grew up wishing that he was an Egyptian, because he thought that Egyptians did all the cool stuff. And it was only as he grew up later that he started to learn more about all of the astronomy that Maya astronomers did, and all of the structures they had made before there were telescopes or anything for observing the universe, and just kind of connecting with his own past and relating it to the present. And he went on to create a school for kids to learn more about that mm-hmm. culture also. And I think a lot of the indigenous and native stories in the book are like that, people who didn't realize what their predecessors had contributed, or the interest that they had in the sky, and reconnecting both with that and with the astronomy itself at the same time.
There's such powerful examples of, you know, this reminder that the stars and the moon are just, they're always there. And it's, I love that you highlight how much you can do regardless of where you are, whether you live in an apartment in the middle of a city with a ton of light pollution, whether you're someplace out in nature. I have a very vivid memory of being a kid, and some of my family lived out on Long Island in like this tiny little town with no light pollution, it seemed, because I remember seeing the night sky and my mind being blown. Like, why did they have so many stars and we don't have that many stars? But then you get to carry that knowledge, like, actually, we do have that many stars.
Right.
That we can do these practices even if we're not in Sag Harbor, New York. So how do we do these in our backyard?
Right. I think, I mean, yeah, most people live in places where you can only see a few dozen stars at most, especially in the US, where people are concentrated in cities. But the, you know, the sun, the moon, and the planets are visible from almost anywhere. And I think there's kind of a simplicity in being able to appreciate what you can see. And then, you know, when you have the chance to go out to Long Island or you know, if you go on a camping trip and you can see more stars, like taking, I think it's interesting to take the knowledge that, you know, the sun that you see every day is a star, and then you go out camping and see a lot more, and you can think all of those are a sun, essentially. And that's just, and that most of them, almost all of them also have planets, solar systems, you know, maybe life, we don't know. And it's just very overwhelming to look at it that way. But I think grounding yourself in the astronomy that's close by of the solar system can help you appreciate the stuff that's farther away. And all of that is accessible from, you know, an apartment balcony in the middle of a city.
And it's such a powerful mind exercise to do this dance between, here I am in an apartment in the middle of a busy city, and I have my stack of bills and my laundry, and the car needs gas before I get to work. And at the same time, in the same breath, I am like this little mote of dust in this massive universe. And there's something about the both and of that that feels really like life-giving is what I think of, right? Like it's energizing in a way.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, thinking that all the stars are suns doesn't solve anyone's problems. It doesn't make the bills easier to pay. And knowing that you're a speck in the universe doesn't, you know, make the electric company not come after those bills, but it does provide a bit of a break and a respite from thinking about them, I think. And you can be small in the universe, and your problems and joys can be important because they're important to you, I think. And yeah. Just, yeah, one thing that I don't know if I would qualify this as mindful or not, but like a philosophical thing that I like to think about sometimes when I'm getting very neurotic about something that's going on is, 13.8 billion years ago, the Big Bang happened, the universe started expanding, and these billions of years later, like, what I'm worried about is what someone else thinks of me, because human brains evolved to be like that. And then it just gives me the perspective, like, actually, that's kind of ridiculous and funny, and then it doesn't solve anything, but it just takes my mind out of its track for a second, I think.
Yeah, it, you know, it interrupts that narrative that is so I-focused, so me-focused. Mm-hmm. And it gives us this more cosmic perspective, right? And it goes back to exactly what you said about this idea of us shifting from a culture that told stories about stars to a culture that tells stories about self. And I mean, you just modeled that so beautifully, I think. And some of these exercises, man, I mean, the most simple one, and it like, literally, I was like, hey, worth every penny, because I just learned something really important. I'm totally calling myself out for all the listeners. I cannot for the life of me figure out the direction I am moving in at any given time. And for my whole life, I'm like, my mind is blown when people say, are you going east or west on 285? And I'm like, I have no idea which, unless there's a sign that says, I don't know. And in the book, the first exercise is, how do you figure out the directions based on where you're standing? Mm-hmm. What is, so that was my favorite. What was your favorite exercise to put in the book?
Yeah, I am also bad with directions, by the way, and for the comfort of the listeners, also bad with constellations, to be honest. So I think this, hopefully, if I can write this book, you can do these exercises. My favorite is actually a pretty simple one too, and it all you need for it is an empty toilet paper roll, which hopefully we all have plenty of these days, and you take it, just go outside any night and point it at the sky and see how many things are within your field of view. You can do that for like 5 different spots in the sky. And this is a little bit of math, I guess, but take an average of how many things on average are within that toilet paper roll view. Mm-hmm. And it turns out if you could point that thing at the sky 250 times, you would have covered the whole thing, but that takes a long time. So if you just take your average and multiply it by 250, you know how many stars are in the sky where you are, right now, which I don't know. Yeah, I mean, and if you're in a sky filled with stars, it's impossible to count. I used to try when I was a kid, and I would always lose count or lose my place, and you can never do it. And then if there are not a lot of stars, you know, it can be hard to find them. But it's kind of a way of connecting you to the specific place where you are, because that number is going to be different every single place that you are. And so you can see what's there or what you lack and see how it changes depending on where you are. Just, you know, always carry a toilet paper roll, I guess, is the lesson.
I love that. And I say, you know, every parent probably saves every single empty toilet paper roll because of all the school projects that need them. So it's a handy tool.
Science fair and art both at once.
Perfect. I love that. And you also do some interesting exercises that give such a unique perspective on time, like tracking the planet's movement across the space that you look up every night, or the phases of the moon, which listeners just did with me as we meditated in the last month or so. Talk to me a little bit about using the sky as a metric of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a practice that goes very far back in human history. You know, we haven't had clocks for very long, clocks or, you know, paper calendars that you can stick on the wall. And so tracking the changes both of the stars throughout the year and the planets on a shorter time scale and the moon over the course of a modern month or so was the way that humans kept time for a long time. So I think that it connects us back to that. And what's interesting to me about it is, you know, there are some psychological studies that suggest that, you know, time seems to pass faster when you're not doing or noticing new things. You're just kind of in your routine and you just kind of fly through it and everything seems like a blur. But every day out there, you know, the planets are in a different place, the moon is in a different phase, the sun is setting in a different spot. And if you can just take a moment to notice how those things change over the days or the seasons, it's kind of like I think of it as like a signpost that you could say, this is different. I'm noticing something new about my environment, kind of slowing life down, which I don't know about you, but I'm mostly always trying to slow life down a little bit.
Yes, always. One of the things that I learned, I never took an astronomy class in college, so I know nothing about the sky. And one of the things I learned was that I always assumed that all constellations were visible at all times. Like, I didn't realize in the winter you see certain constellations and in the sun, I mean, which seems ridiculous once you figure it out and say it out loud, but I had never stopped to think about it, right? I just assumed I would look up and I would always see Orion's belt. And right now, at this moment in time, when I look up, I do see Orion's belt. And it's been fun to give some context to what we're seeing in the same way that, you know, we sit down to meditate. It's not like we're having new thoughts. We're just having the same thoughts that we have while we're doing dishes and while we're cooking dinner or driving to work. But when we engage with them differently, all of a sudden, all this awareness opens up. And I'm finding the exact same experience happens when we simply notice in a different way, right? It's not just like, oh, it's a pretty night sky, but oh, how interesting, it's winter. I'm facing south and there's Orion's belt. And in June, I don't think I'm going to see that. It's going to be something different, right? That's such an interesting way to relate to where we are in the world. It's not just simply, that's a pretty sky. And it's not that I have to be some sort of genius to know all the constellations, but it was, you know, your book is a very easy read. It's very easy. It's, you know, I sat down and I was able to like go through a couple chapters and do a couple of the exercises. All of them feel like exercises I could step outside and do with my kids. All of them, they're like completely accessible. And it just, I don't know, it's brought something really lovely into my evenings.
You're welcome. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think, you know, you are far from alone in, you know, not knowing that where Orion would be when. I think that's very normal. There are tons of things I don't know. And I think everybody comes to stuff with, you know, their own background and their own knowledge, and astronomers expect everyone to know lots of astronomy, but people know lots of different things. But I like to think that reading the book and, you know, maybe having a little bit of understanding of why Orion might disappear during a certain season. And, you know, it's because of the way that Earth is moving through space and around the sun and where they are in relation to each other. Like if you're thinking about why Orion is gone or why Orion is there, you're kind of forced almost to think about the orientation of stuff in the sky, which forces in a nice way, hopefully, you to think about Earth as a planet in space and all the, you know, random events throughout cosmic history that have led us here.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think about and talk about often is a very famous quote from Carl Sagan about me being made of star stuff. And when he says that, he follows it with, "We are a way for the universe to know itself." And every time I read that or hear that, I think also that what he's saying is the inverse, that the universe is a way for us to know ourselves, right? Yeah. Because when we're thinking about the rotation of the Earth, when we're thinking about our placement in the solar system or what's happening above us, I don't think there's a way to disassociate that from where we are as an individual in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. It's a both and an outer and an inner happening in the exact same moment.
Yeah. And I also think to expand on that a bit, I kind of find comfort and find it compelling that if we are a way for the universe to know itself and vice versa, like there are probably also things that are beyond our comprehension out there. Mm. Like if we came from the universe in some way, it's probably impossible for us to totally know it. And I don't know. I like that. I think it's both a little bit spiritual and scientific because, you know, science is all about mysteries and trying to solve them, and that there are just some mysteries that we probably will never solve, which I like, I guess.
I love that too, so much. I think the mystery is what makes life so fun, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we get to explore that and engage with it in all these different ways. And for some of us, seated meditation practice, and for some of us, staring at the sky or painting, or, you know, there's just a myriad of ways to engage with that mystery. I think it's pretty powerful. I'm curious what you said that you have been interested in space since you were a kid. Did you study astronomy in college, or was that just a one-off class? What was that path like for you?
Yeah, I did study astronomy in college. I started out wanting to be an astronaut just because I grew up next to every kid wants to be an astronaut, and I grew up next to a bunch of them. So that was my path. And then I remember when I was 8 or 9 or something, we had the Encarta 95, encyclopedia CD-ROM. And I was just reading about all the different branches of astronomy. And I was like, oh, actually, I don't want to just go to space. I want to know more about these things that are out there. And I think I'm probably pretty stubborn. So I was just like, this is what I like, and I'm going to keep doing it. And so I progressed and went to college in that. And I actually became fascinated with a branch of astronomy called radio astronomy, which is instead of using telescopes to get the sort of light that you can see, you're collecting radio waves that come from distant space and turning them into things human senses can make sense of. And I was particularly fascinated with the idea that just like all around us all the time are these waves that we can't detect with our own sensory systems at all, but they're there and they're coming from the universe, and humans trying to know that universe have developed these instruments that let us pick up on these invisible parts of the universe kind of just blew my little mind. And so that's what I studied. And that is what my co-author, Chris Dupree, that is his specialty also. He studies star formation, baby stars being born using radio waves.
Wow. And you have an exercise in the book. I have not done this one, I'll be honest. But you have an exercise in the book, right? Using like a little transmitter radio, right? To hear sounds. Is that right?
Yeah. Just the kind of little radios that everybody used to have around their houses and nobody needs to anymore. But if you turn on just a regular FM AM radio, you can actually pick up, well, you'll hear static if it's not tuned to a station, as we all know. And some small part of that static is actually the leftover heat from the Big Bang, from the beginning of the universe, that is just kind of all around us all the time. And we have no idea, but your radio knows. And so it's picking up on some of that. So yeah, when I'm having my intrusive thoughts or whatever, I could just, you know, you could turn on a radio and be like, well, that's from the Big Bang. Maybe I could take a second and think about that instead of whatever I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm. I need all the head explosion emojis right now. Like sometimes I wish I could just like make emojis happen in real life, because thinking about residual heat from the Big Bang happening at this very second that we are talking is insane. Like yes. That is an amazing thing to even begin to reflect on. I just, my mouth wants to hang open. That's crazy.
I know, it's so cool that it sounds very fake, but I promise it's true. Mm-hmm.
That is so cool. And it's, you know, maybe even in that exact same chapter that exercise is, you talk about that the universe is continually expanding, right? The Big Bang happened and all of this matter, I guess you would call it matter, is expanding out and continuing to expand out and continuing to expand out, even in the second. And in a more minute way, when we think about being present, being mindful, and we're asked to be in this moment, it's also this sort of ever expanding moment of now, right? Like now is not a finite point. It's an ever expanding point. And so engaging that sense of expansion in this moment that you and I are speaking, as well as thinking about that happening at this very second all around us, again, it's just mind blowing.
It is. Yeah. I mean, things like that also help me think about the universe and the sky as things that are dynamic and changing. In general, you know, when you look up at the sky and you see those stars, like they essentially look on their own the same from night to night, like a point of light is a point of light. But thinking about the universe expanding makes me think about, you know, the fact that those are stars that are, you know, their atoms are fusing together. They're like sending off big bursts of plasma. Like all this stuff is going on out there all the time. It's not just a static thing, and everything is changing just like it is on Earth all the time.
Yes, exactly. Mind yeah. explosion. Everything is changing all the time. Is there anything that you particularly love in this book that I didn't already call out and obsess over?
Well, I think some of the things that are both the simplest to do and the most cool, I think, are some of the things in the book that are actually events that take place in the universe, like mm-hmm. meteor showers or lunar and solar eclipses, just actually related to this theme of changing, that there are things that happen in the sky, not just something to look at. And so in the book, we have a list, I think, of upcoming meteor showers and places and times that you can go see different eclipses. And those are just, they're powerful, I think, indications of, you know, orienting yourself in space. When we see a meteor shower, we're going through the debris left over from a comet swirling around the solar system and pieces that are falling toward Earth, which is wild. And lunar and solar eclipses are when the sun, the Earth, and the moon kind of line up and cast shadows on each other, which is, you know, a thing that happens on Earth, but much more powerfully when it's the shadow of Earth or the moon. And so if you want to have your mind blown, I would say that those sorts of events are good things to check out.
You know, I remember the last total eclipse, which was several years ago at this point. Mm-hmm. But there was a podcast episode from Radiolab, which was one of my favorite podcasts of all time. And they had this recording. It was like a montage of people reacting to a total eclipse happening, like that total shift. And I, to this day, even now, I get goosebumps thinking about it because it was so powerful to even hear. I wasn't even witnessing it. I was just hearing people express their own shock and awe in that moment of awakening. Right. Mm-hmm. So I did note that actually. I was like, oh yeah, I need to pay attention to this.
Yeah. I think that there's another one coming up in a few years here in the, you know, in the continental US, which would be good. But yeah, actually a few years ago I wrote an article about psychologists who study people who are witnessing solar eclipses and like what is so meaningful about them. And the kind of overall takeaway was that when the sun essentially disappears, that's like the one constant in everybody's life is like the sun comes up and then it goes away, daytime, nighttime. And when it's nighttime during daytime, you're just kind of able to see the planet as like a essentially an alien world, to see it differently, even though you're in the exact same space you were before, which is kind of a metaphorical lesson, I guess. But I went to Wyoming for the last eclipse and
you did.
And it was very, yeah, I fell into that camp of people who had their minds blown by that. So I would highly recommend it for everyone.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for that.
Sure.
We will all make sure to do it, right, listeners?
No problem. Very easy.
Very easy. Just a quick trip. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your time. The book is Astronomical Mindfulness. We can get it anywhere we find books, our local bookstore, Amazon, all the online places. Yes.
Yep, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yes. Anywhere else you want to point the listener to follow you or Chris or anything like that?
Sure. Well, we have a website for the book. It's astromindful.com. Just has some more information about what the exercises are like and stuff. And I think we might expand it to include people's own experiences using the book, or, you know, pictures they've drawn from observing and things like that. I am on the on Twitter at SkolesSarah, S-C-O-L-E-S, Sarah, if anyone wants to check that out. And yeah, thank you for having me. I hope that your listeners find it interesting.
Awesome. Welcome. I'm Meryl. Sometimes the simplest practices are the most helpful. When lost, overwhelmed, deeply saddened, or scared, I often find myself simply walking outside. I sit down or I lie down, and I stare up at the sky. There's nothing specific to do, nothing you need to feel or try for. It's simply a moment to watch the movement of the sky or the stars, to remember that the Earth is nothing more than a pale blue dot rotating in a vast galaxy of stars, planets, moons, and more. This practice connects us to something larger than ourselves and this one moment in time. It connects us to timeless time and boundless space. A little perspective is always a good thing. So join me now in walking outside. You can be anywhere, and it can be any time of day or night. If at all possible, I'd love for you to lie down. You could spread out a blanket, you could grab a sleeping bag, or just even a pillow, throw it on the ground, and lay down. If you need to sit, of course, that's always welcome. Make this practice work for you and where you are. If you're lying down, lie on your back. Let your legs go out long and your feet flop open. Let your hands rest along your side and turn your palms face up. Let your gaze drift out up above you. And together, let's just take a nice deep inhale in. And exhale out a sigh. And maybe you want to do that again. So inhale deeply, gather up everything there is about this moment. And with an exhale, invite yourself to simply land here. Let your eyes stare up at the sky. And you take in whatever it is that you see in this moment. Blue sky, clouds, stars, rain. And you feel your breath flow. And we're going to consciously connect to all of our senses so that we can be first fully present and then connect with the greater cosmos around us. And so as we lie here and breathe, I invite you just to wiggle your toes and feel the way the heels and the back of the legs rest against the ground. And as you scan up your body, you might just notice each and every point that is touching the earth in this moment. The heels, the back of the calves, back of the thighs and the glutes. Maybe your mid-back and the shoulder blades. The back of the arms, back of the palms, and the back of your head. And with each point that you notice touching the earth, see if you can let go there just a little bit more so that you rest heavier and heavier against the ground beneath you. And as you feel the weight of your body connecting to the earth, maybe you also feel the flow of your breath. Every inhale in, a little expansion. Every exhale out, a little contraction. And your eyes still gazing up at the sky, taking in colors, textures, movement. Simply allowing yourself to see all that surrounds you. And gradually we shift our attention to our ears. And we simply take in all of the sounds present in this moment. You don't have to identify them or explain them. We just hear what this moment sounds like. And as you breathe in and out, see if you notice the scent of this moment. The scent of the earth, just as it is in this moment. And you feel yourself as one tiny dot on the surface of the earth. And as you feel, as you sense the earth, perhaps you can expand your understanding, your vision outward. Remembering that the earth is just one tiny dot in this galaxy. And that this galaxy is just one tiny dot of innumerable galaxies. And for just another moment or two, we hold the contrast between the solidity, the weight of our body on the earth in this moment, and the vastness, the ever-expanding edges of the universe that we're inside. Perhaps here, as you watch the skies above you and you feel the ground beneath you, you connect back to your breath. Noticing that every inhale, your body expands, making you as expansive as the universe. And every exhale, you feel the very center of your being, the reality of this moment. Inhaling to your most expansive state. Exhale, settling into your very center. Taking one last breath here. Welcoming yourself to linger as long as this practice feels good for you. This recording will now end. Thank you. Well, listeners, we have just meditated to the phases of the moon, and now you have an entire book to guide you through some additional astronomical mindfulness exercises. Sarah, thank you again.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Our Mindful Nature. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or leaving me a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps others to find the show. And let's face it, we could all use a few more meditators in our lives. Our Mindful Nature is recorded on Muscogee land and produced with the support of Brianna Nielsen. Deep gratitude is offered to acoustic ecologists Gordon Hempton and Nick McMahon for the use of their nature field recordings in many of these episodes. To join my live classes, ask questions, or learn about my teacher trainings, please visit merylarnett.com. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next week.